Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskans.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. A common thread among several speeches and discussions taking place at the 1980 convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives is the idea that one way or another, native land in Alaska is still in jeopardy, from within and from without. Peter McDonald is chairman of the Navajo Tribal Council, and he's the chairman of the Council of Energy Resource Tribes, a coalition devoted to keeping native control of natural resources, including the land, in the hands of natives. In his address to the convention, McDonald describes how land has been taken away from natives and why that, as long as native land is valuable, somebody else will try to get it.
Since the passage of 1971, Alaskan Native Claims Settlement Act, I know that much progress and growth has taken place through the region and the villages, both financially, socially, and politically. I believe the last time I was here, I'm sure it is still today, that you still have some serious concerns regarding the future, regarding your heritage, regarding the culture and traditions. Your situation, to a great extent, is no different than what we in the lower 48 had gone through. As you know, in the 16 and 1700s, the Indians in the lower 48 had a lot of land. As a matter of fact, before Columbus, we had the entire United States. But since that time, much has taken place in terms of taking the lands of the Native Americans. We had wars. We were relocated to different parts of the country. And every time we get relocated to another part of the United States or territories, they would discover something else that the major society or the Anglos would want, either the land or the gold. And then we would be moved to another place, lose more and more and more land. Finally, today, we only control less than 1% of the land in the United States. Wars took place in 1700 and 1800s where cavalrymen come down to the Indian villages and move us further and further away from good land, precious lands, in an effort to wipe out the Indian nations. Of course, in the 1800s, a lot of treaties were signed. Some of those treaties were good, some of them were bad. Some of them were honored, others were not. Finally, when the people of the United States thought that they have squeezed out everything we have from us, including our land, our water, and resources, it sort of left us alone. We had no more sex appeal. Until just recently, They learned that we got some oil and gas, coal and uranium on our reservation. As a matter of fact, we have some water rights. So they began to reactivate the Indian Wars all over again. This time, not by cavalrymen. This time, it's through legislation, through judicial process, not our judicial process, but their own, feeling real comfortable that they will win again because it's in their forum, it's in their language, as well as it's before their judge and not ours. So those are some of the chronological history of where we are, where we have been, and where we are today. To some extent, I feel that the Alaskan Natives are going through the same process. Once upon a time, you had the entire Alaska, over 300 million acres of land, all yours. Well, they didn't pay much attention to you because there was really no sex appeal in all the snow that you have and what have you, until they discovered that there was gold up here, and they further discovered that there were timber, oil and gas, perhaps coal and uranium. Then all of a sudden they want to make a deal, just as they wanted to make a deal with the Navajos and the Sioux and other tribes in the lower 48. It's the same people. They always want to make a good deal for you. The good deal here, I understand, is that they have left you with 25% of the land that you have had, and they devise a beautiful scheme by which maybe someday they will get the rest of that 25%. So I have every sympathy for your concern for the future regarding tribe, the spirit, the strength, and how you're going to maintain what you have. Yes, people are envious all the time of what you have, no matter how little you have. Today, you have money. You got natural resources. And all of these are very attractive. No, they're not going to send in the National Guards or the cavalrymen. They come up here by the droves with briefcases. And they're going to do everything they can by legislative method or through judicial process to make sure that you don't keep what is rightly yours and belongs to you and what little they left you with. So I'm sure, just as we have witnessed and still have quite a number of snake oil peddlers who like to come around and say, look, I know what to do with your money. I think you ought to put it over here or over here, or over here, but for thinking for you, I want my cut. I was looking at your yellow pages this morning, and I have never seen so many lawyers listed for a city this size. I have never seen so many real estate agents listed in the yellow pages for the city the size of the Anchorage. This sort of reminded me of some of the same folks we dealt with down in the lower 48. And I was wondering why we didn't have too many of them floating around down there. They all come up here now. in the hopes that they'll make some hay. I feel that the problems that exist in terms of what to do is always as a result of having something that is precious, something that somebody else wants and needs, such as the land that you have, the water that you have, the natural resources and the money. And believe me, there are those who are interested in those assets, resources that you have. It's not just the individuals whose names are listed in the yellow pages who are interested. It's corporations as well, big corporations. They like to put their hands on some of those that you have. Even the states have an interest. We have states, we live in states, we live in Arizona, New Mexico. We always, in one fashion or another, at odds with the state of New Mexico, every state in which the Indian lives. We're always fighting over jurisdiction. Who's going to have the right to say who can hunt and fish? Who is going to collect the taxes? Who's going to control the schools? All of these become a matter of a great big issue. So a state has an interest of wanting what you have. Even the federal government, you know, they are our trustee in a way, but federal government has a constituency and they like to listen to them. And the constituency that the federal government have always say, why give the money to the Indians? Why let the Indians control the land? Why use tax dollars to support the Indians, Native Americans? So they want to respond to that. That's why oftentimes you wonder why Congress or the federal government really don't pay much attention, but sometimes they even act as though they are not yours and my trustee. Sometimes I feel that whatever they do, the federal government does, it's with some other motive. I know you have CETA programs, you have housing programs. These are all federal programs. Oftentimes they come around, they bother you. They want you to fill out voluminous paperwork in the hopes that maybe somehow you will not adhere to the many regulations and guidelines that they send out from Washington. And if you don't, then they'll say, well, so much money in your program will be disallowed. That means you will have to pay it out of your corporation monies to pay the government bank.
More on the paperwork war against Native self-determination, according to Peter MacDonald, chairman of the Council of Energy Resource Tribes, on next week's Chinook. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage,
how things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller with the second half of Peter McDonald's message to the 1980 AFN convention. McDonald is chairman of the Navajo Tribal Council and chairman of the Council of Energy Resource Tribes. In the previous program, we heard him say something to the effect that whenever governments make deals with Indians, be it a treaty, a CETA contract, or the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act, it seems like the natives are set up to lose. One of the reasons this happens, McDonald says, is because Native Americans haven't understood the mysterious workings of the powerful paperwork tribe of Washington, D.C.
This tribe lives on the banks of the River Potomac, and they live entirely on paper. And I call them the paper tribe. They eat paper, they sleep paper, and each day they produce more and more paper with words and a lot of words. And the only reality that they know are words written on paper. They have a native craft which they are very proud of, and they call it regulations. Just as you and I, the Native Americans, are very proud of the native craft that we have, such as the rugs, the silver work that we produce, so is this paper tribe is very proud to demonstrate how they are producing larger and larger sets of regulations and other kinds of artifacts called guidelines, instructions to the field, manuals, position papers, option papers, and so on and so on. I'm told that each day this tribe produces several thousand pounds of regulations, and this tribe is also now looking to market this product just as we market our own handicrafts. And you know, they believe that Indian reservations is a perfect market for their arts and crafts. That's why they keep sending you more and more paperwork to fill out. But you know, we the Native Americans are not of this tribe of regulation makers. In our hogans and igloos, we did not watch our fathers and mothers writing regulations. I don't know why, but that's not what they did. They herded sheep, carded wool, they fished and harpooned and trapped. Some made jewelry and some did other things. But not even our medicine men made regulations. And I'm told that this so-called paper tribe even has a special public works program for the regulation writing tribe. They are called civil service. But they also have a special private sector program for the paper tribe by creating tax incentives for business and industry, letting them deduct all legal fees as business expenses. So one group writes the regulations, another group disputes the meaning of the regulations, and they keep full employment going by creating more and more regulations and more problems of interpretation and application. You and I are not accustomed to the ways of this paper tribe in Washington, D.C. But you know, we are told, you are told, and I am told, that to become truly acculturated and be civilized, we must emulate their ways and try our best to produce similar artifacts. That's a real tough order. My problem is that I have never discovered how to cook a regulation or eat a regulation, water a regulation, or how to wrap a regulation around me to keep warm. But I hope to learn these mysterious arts before it is too late. For I am told that learning the arts of the paper tribe is very important for the survival of our people. Because you and I, Native Americans, are far from being proficient in dealing with the paperwork that constantly flood us. Just imagine the corporations that you have. You know what they're telling you to do? They're telling you, we're giving you all this money, millions of dollars. Now you set up corporations and become self-sufficient and profitable. And when you become profitable, then you could provide the social services that your people need. That's ridiculous. Why should you, as a private corporation, spend your profit, your overhead, in providing social services, when Chrysler Corporation don't have to worry about welfare for anyone except the welfare of the stockholders who constantly are asking for dividends every quarter? Even they, with the best minds, I'm sure, with the best financial support, I'm sure, can go down under. Yet, the government says, you form corporations, make it profitable, and you render social services, and somehow the government is going to step back, the state is going to step back and let you take care of yourself with your corporation dollars. Do you think that the federal government will bail you out if one of the corporations goes bankrupt like Chrysler Corporation? No. The way they'll bail you out is they'll say, okay, let me buy it from you for half the price. So it is still very much a double standard under which we are asked, you are asked, to perform. I'm sure a concern to you, it is a concern to me. That is why I say that if we're going to survive as tribes, if we're going to maintain the strength and the spirit and look to the future, we got to somehow understand the ways of the paper tribe. But you know, there may be failures, but failures loom even larger. It has never been a greater, and it has never posed greater danger to survival than now. Many of you have no doubt heard President Carter talk about his energy program, about the need to conserve, about the need to decrease reliance on foreign oil. He called his energy program moral equivalent of war. But if this energy program is war, I'm very much afraid that we are about to witness a new Native American wars. For Native Americans control large amount of energy resources. As a matter of fact, the Navajo Nation alone exported over 350 billion kilowatt hours in energy in 1 year. That's enough energy to meet the total needs of the state of Arizona for the next 32 years. Yes, brothers and sisters, we face a choice. Shall we eat, drink, and be merry now? Shall we sell off our assets? strip mine our coal and partake of the American dream at least once in our history? Or shall we use our bargaining power now to purchase for our children and our children's children a future with dignity, with security, and with fulfillment? President Carter called upon all Americans to support his energy program in order to maintain their way of life, the white man's way of life, and their standard of living. But what about our way of life, your way of life? How about our standard of living, your standard of living? Yes, together we must work out a strategy for survival. In that sense, I say we must continue to seek control of the resources that we have. We must continue to insist that jobs be made available to our people as a condition for involvement in our development. We must be very strong about the jurisdiction that we have regarding the fishing rights that we have. The resolution you just passed now is a good example. We must stand up. We must also move in the educational field to make sure that your children and our children receive the kind of education and training that we need so that in the next 5 to 10 years, we will have the manpower, the professionalism that we do not have today. Above all, we got to be together. Not only the 12 regional corporations and must be together, not only must the village corporation and the regional corporation be together as one, but as Native Americans, between you and us in the lower 48, we must be together as one if we're going to have an impact. You have all that opportunity here. You have about 10% of the population. You have at least 1/4 of the real estate in this state. You can have a tremendous effect. I know it because even in the lower 48, when we only have 1% of the land, in some cases only 1% of the population in the states, we've made many differences in the political races. Lastly, we must ever be mindful of the wisdom of our forefathers, who teaches that the frog does not drink up the pond in which it lives. The resources and reserves we control today must be used now to assure a future when those resources are gone. I wish you the best in this conference. Thank you very much.
Peter McDonald, chairman of the Navajo Tribal Council and the Council of Energy Resource Tribes, speaking at the 1980 Convention of the Alaska Federation of Natives. I'm Paula Schiller. You've been listening to Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.